The Last Word with Matt Cooper. Today
FM. Minister for the Environment, Communications and Transport, Eamon Ryan, is with us. And today, the Dublin Airport Authority, the DAA, said that it will breach its passenger cap this year by more than 1 million people. It's allowed a maximum of 32 million passengers a year through the airport. It'll go over that. Minister Eamon Ryan, will there be a punishment for DAA for that?
All companies, all individuals have to live within planning conditions. You can't ignore the law. And in this case, there was a decision in 2008 by An Bord Pleanála to impose that cap. And, you know, you can't ignore the law.
What punishment will there be?
Well, firstly, it's a matter for the Fingal County Council, which is the local planning authority, the County Council in that case. At the same time, that Fingal is also going to be considering an application by Dublin Airport to extend the cap. So they'll have to do that. The airport, the authorities in terms of regulating slots can also influence and regulate passenger numbers. It's very difficult to predict exactly passenger numbers. You don't know exactly how many people are going to be on flights and so on.
But you can have a good approximation because you know how many seats are on a particular flight, and most of them do operate to nearly full capacity.
And as I said, this will present real difficulties for the airport, there's no doubt about it, and disadvantages for the economy, and is not ideal at all. But you do have to recognise and follow the law. Dublin Airport found that out in terms of, there was another example of that where in the reopening, on the opening of the new runway, there was a flight path out which was not within the planning conditions. Rightly, their neighbours, residents in Fingal, North Dublin, were very annoyed with that. And Dublin Airport came out and admitted they had made a mistake by not adhering to the planning stipulations, and they reversed and changed that process. So they will have to manage that in conjunction with Fingal County Council. But in the meantime, we are also there looking to make an application to increase the cap, and that, I suppose, is the best and most immediate way of fixing that issue.
Well, I'll get to that in 1 second, but of the 33 million passengers, will they all be entering or leaving Dublin Airport? Because aren't there a significant number of people, particularly on Aer Lingus flights, who use Dublin Airport as a hub to transfer to somewhere else? And that is relevant because the 32 million cap was put on because of road access to the airport, and that doesn't apply to those people.
Correct, and they're not being counted within the numbers that have set out. There's something like about 1.5 million passengers, I think, this year, who are, as you say, transit passengers who don't exit, who don't go outside of airside. So they are not included in any of the numbers that are being discussed.
Okay, but you mentioned that there's a planning process underway, but isn't there a real problem with the time it takes in our planning process? And even if there's legitimate criticism to be made of DAA for being late, perhaps, in making its application, the reality is that this needs to be dealt with, doesn't it?
DAA were late, and they also have to, the planning application is waiting for them to provide further information to their local planning authority. So in a sense, the ball is in DAA's court. But you're right, and I'd be the first, I think I have on this programme and elsewhere, although I don't like to do it, but criticising, we have a significant problem in our planning and legal system at the present time. The time it takes to get decisions, we've had a particular problem in An Bord Pleanála, don't need to rehearse, go back over those in recent years, that is being addressed.
Haven't you fixed it in the 4.5 years of government?
Well, we have, in the sense that we've appointed, given a very significant increase in staff numbers. It's Minister Dara Brown, obviously, has responsibility, but we've collective government responsibility. We have had a real problem in An Bord Pleanála. That has been fixed. They have the staff numbers. They've had an increase even the other day. Cabinet agreed the appointment of additional, I think it was 8 members to the board. So we have to speed up. We also have to pass the Planning and Development Bill, because it isn't just the administrative difficulties that existed within An Bord Pleanála. It's also a legal system which is increasingly litigious, expensive, and doesn't serve justice, in my mind, in the sense that it delays so many decisions. It's not just in regard to Dublin Airport. We can't get planning applications through for wind farms at the present time. I've seen in the transport sector and other areas of transport where we're waiting for decisions on critical projects. So we do have to speed up our entire planning system. I agree with Kenny Jacobs. I heard him making that point in the radio this morning. He's correct on that.
Okay. How many passengers do you believe should be allowed through Dublin Airport in a year?
I think we need, firstly, balanced development. It isn't about 90%+ of all the passengers are coming through Dublin Airport. I would like to see, and I know you'd say I would say this, but I do think for balanced region development, we do need to see more passengers in Knock, Shannon, Cork, and that's happening.
But the airlines could go there as it stands, and they're not choosing to increase the numbers dramatically. They are increasing the numbers, but they don't want to provide the services that they can provide into and out of Dublin.
True, but we've been funding, you can't, and we can't directly, we're not going to tell airlines where they have to go or telling passengers which airport that they have to fly out of. But one of the ways we can promote that, which we're doing, is to invest in the regional airports, including, I believe one of the things I'd be arguing with my cabinet colleagues, we've a review of the, we've a strategic rail review, the likes of a rail link to Shannon Airport, in my mind, could be a game changer. So that could be used. And that, in a way, is as important a part and answer to your question. The aviation...
How long would it take to put that in?
It would take some time because, A, the planning difficulties, but also it is a new section of track. But it's relatively short from probably 6 Mile Bridge to the airport, and the reservation is there, so the land is available. So it shouldn't be actually that either long or expensive.
Previously, the airport got planning permission for the second runway, which has been installed, and that implies that 60 million passengers a year could go to Dublin Airport, that the runways have the capacity to deal with that number. Would you be agreeable to that?
Only that, those numbers in my mind, when you get to that scale of development, only starts to become viable when you do have alternative sustainable aviation fuel so that it lives within climate limits. Those are numbers, Matt, if you're talking to those numbers, you're talking into the next decade, well into the next decade.
You are, but let's face it, we are actually growing our population very quickly in this country. We've had a dramatic increase in the number of people employed in this country and living in this country. We have projections that over the next 30 years, we could have over 7 million people living in the Republic of Ireland alone. Does that not suggest that even if you do manage to put more traffic by the way of Cork and Shannon and Knock, that Dublin Airport is going to have to continue to grow because as an island, people will be flying in and flying out rather than using alternatives?
I expect it will. And Dublin Airport do a very good job, and the airlines there are very effective. They've delivered huge connectivity and benefits to the country in that regard. And I agree too. I got a lot of criticism. If you look online, I tend to get excoriated. I made the point in the Dáil speech I got about 5 or 6 years ago that we have to start thinking of an island of 10 million people. And I was including Northern Ireland population in that. That was seen as all some sort of conspiracy mad idea. It's not. We are a country that is attracting people. We want to see more Irish people coming home as well and stop the flight of a lot of our younger Irish people who might have to leave. And so, yes, we are going to increase numbers, but we can and will do that. We'll do that best when we do it in a sustainable way, which goes back to the point I made. If you're thinking at that time frame, we have to make sure we have the sustainable aviation fuel so that all those flights are within a world which is addressing the climate crisis we're also facing.
Realistically, is that going to happen? This notion of sustainable aviation fuel, is it going to make up more than a few percent of the aviation fuel required for all of the flights?
Yes. By the middle part of this next decade, we're starting to see very large quantities. We will be able to convert, in my mind, and what we're working towards, the large surplus we have in renewable electricity, particularly offshore wind, through electrolysis into synthetic fuels, which will give us the capacity to do it. And the question you said, will we do it or will we not? What's the alternative, Matt? Do we just allow everything grow and everything burn?
Even if we identify that we should do all these things, can this country do it? Because you've already pointed out about because of our planning shortcomings, we are well behind where we should be in providing wind energy both onshore and offshore. We are years behind where we should be in relation to that.
We're one of the leading countries in the world. We've won the highest percentage of wind power on an integrated synchronistic grid in the world. We are up in the medal position. We're
nowhere near the potential that we could have if we got the planning sorted out.
We're not as bad as some people think, and we can and will get better. Today, there's figures published by the Sustainable Energy Authority of Ireland. It shows, now it's only provisional, we won't know the full details, but for the first 6 months of the year, we've seen a further 17% reduction in emissions from the electricity sector, on top of the 6.8% reduction nationwide that occurred last year. The main reason is because we're seeing more solar as well as wind, and it won't be just those, it will also be interconnection and batteries as part of an integrated, renewable, smart energy system. We can and will be good at that. And one of the benefits for that is it can give us the fuels that we then need to decarbonise flight and transport and other systems. That is doable. We can make that happen.
Well, we've talked about the planning, but there's also the value for money. And this week we've had this €336,000 bike shelter in Leinster House. I'm going to put this point to you, Minister, because this is part of a pattern in this country of dramatic overspending on public projects. If you look at the cost, sorry, Minister, if you look at the cost, say, of the National Children's Hospital, if you look at the cost of various infrastructures in relation to roads that have been put in over the years, that there's always been constant revision in the budgets upwards before then finally claims are made at the end that we've come in on budget. And I can give you the likes of the Port Tunnel, a very important piece of infrastructure, but one that cost more than it was supposed to. The cost of Lewis went up beyond what it was. We talk about Metrolink coming in. It could cost anywhere between 9 and 21 billion. And because of the experience that people have seen, everyone that we talk to believes it'll probably come in near the higher amount.
We have to get better at that. But can I just finish one point, if I can, just on the airport, because I have to use the opportunity. I'm here with you. You wrote an article 2 weeks ago, and I very well presented an article, but it made one point, which is a repeating of what Michael O'Leary has been saying, that I just have to kick back on.
Okay.
I respond to it.
And can I say, I've never spoken to Michael O'Leary. He doesn't talk to me, so I've never spoken to him about this issue. Right?
And I've only met him once, but and I made this point to him in person, so therefore I don't know why they're still at it, because he's continuously, and others, saying, oh, this cap can be just resolved by the minister just issuing a directive, issuing a direction. That's not true.
Even a temporary directive while awaiting the outcome of the planning decision.
Not legally possible. Impossible. Unless you get rid of the constitution, unless you get rid of the legal system, you ignore the law.
Can you not introduce a law to allow, in this case of a national interest, given the tourism interest and investment interest?
The entire involvement of the entire planning structures. Mm. You'd have to literally say, we're abandoning planning. And that would not be good for the building of future infrastructure. Now, to make your other point, so I just have to say that because that can't go unchecked.
Okay.
What Michael O'Leary is saying is just not true.
Okay, but address the massive overspending. Whenever we have plans in this country to put in much needed infrastructure, and God knows we need an awful lot more infrastructure, even beyond what we've spoken about, we need it in water supplies, we need it in electricity to deal with the growing population and the lack of confidence that many people have, irrespective of who's in power, for the state to actually deliver value for money what we need.
I agree with you. And that bike shed is the perfect, it's annoying people so much, or that bike shelters, because it is such an egregious example. Yes, we have to. How do we do it then? How do we change? And let's take examples where we have done it and maybe replicate that. We built out a motorway network, actually at relatively, by international standards, low cost, and by in relative terms, on time and on spec and so on. Very good, very high quality. Why was that possible? But one of the things, we gave long-term signals and gave long-term funding commitments so that everyone involved, the industry, knew this is going to be, business is going to be here for the next 5, 10, 20 years. And we did it in a modular, standardised way. And that's what we need to do. If I could go take it back to the most humble example of a shelter, because I've been fighting on this issue for the last 2 or 3 years, where we need bus shelters across the country. It's raining here in Dublin today. I mean, a lot of people, if they're stuck out listening...
Geez, I hope they won't cost as much as the bicycle shelter in Leinster
and
House.
It won't, because we've gone to the NTA, the National Transport Authority, and we said, devise a system where you can do an off-the-peg, good quality, elegant, functional, but not expensive product. And that's now available. Councils will start, people start to see it around the country, where it's standardised, where it's one of a thousand you're delivering. And in that way, you bring down the cost. The other way we bring it down, and it was interesting, we had a competitiveness debate or discussion meeting in Cabinet, in Government the other day. Frances Rann made a point she was presenting to us, and I think it was a very true point. Part of our problem is our system works in silos, that you often have civil servants have got fixated on, I have to make sure that I just meet my kind of criteria that I'm set and my accountability for just my particular patch. And that often tends to decision-making that's very rigid and not collaborative. To deliver a lot of the new infrastructure, you need government, different government departments, you need local government kicking in as well as other agencies. That works best when you work in teams. We did that in COVID. We didn't work in government silos. We worked collectively. That work is increasingly working in climate change. We have set up, I set up 6 climate task forces in offshore wind, in sustainable transport, in heating our buildings, in climate communications, just transition, and in land use. And they are starting to work. That's why we're starting to see emissions fall, because we're showing examples of working collectively. As a small country, that's what we can and will and should be good at.
Do you support Taoiseach Simon Harris's desire to have a separate standalone Department of Infrastructure?
I think we do need to look at how we, the department, you have to carefully get into fantasy cabinet. I think the, we have...
Is the Taoiseach involved in fantasy cabinet?
No. I'm not criticising him in any way in that. But I do, you know, you could start looking at the whole cabinet. There are a number of changes you'd want to make. I do think...
Of the existing cabinet, you'd like to get rid of some of them, would you?
I think there are a number of different improvements that we could make, not getting rid of anyone, but looking at the structure.
Of the departments they have, yes, rather than the individuals.
But I do think there is, in the planning side, to take that one example, to look to see, can we bring planning closer to where the infrastructure provision has to be done, so we make sure that is coordinated. I would look at that. I think that could make a lot of sense.
Okay, just a couple of brief ones to finish. We heard in the news at the 5 of 5 that the Climate Change Advisory Council looked at agricultural emissions. It doesn't suggest a reduction in the size of the national herd, the main source of agricultural emissions. Do you agree with the Climate Change Advisory Council that we do not need to reduce the number of cattle?
In the same way that I'm saying, we don't address the flight issue by just saying we cap the airports. We don't address the agricultural one by saying we cull all the cattle. There will be a reduction in the national herd because there will be more income from farmers, from diversification in a whole range of other areas, the likes of energy, my own area. We're going to, in this budget, roll out very significant supports to assist farmers make that switch so they get a good income from alternative sources and have a diverse income. Then they're not dependent on any one company or any one supply or any one consumer. So yes, okay. I think that will happen. But I agree with the if the Climate Change Advisory Council is saying this, it shouldn't just obsess on is there a cull or not.
Very briefly, one of your other pieces for the Irish Times that people can look at on the Irish Times website yesterday about climate change. You seem to be now, I'm not sure people would necessarily agree, that you seem to think the sky is falling in almost in relation to our future climate in Ireland. Tell us what you fear.
Firstly, sorry about conscious of time, it would take me a long time maybe to explain this properly, but firstly, we should not ignore the climate reality that's in front of us. The sky is not falling in, but the world is in a very precarious position. We're seeing in the last year that global temperatures have jumped beyond what anything scientists expected, particularly in the North Atlantic. And in the last year, our weather has been weird, and it's partly caused by that 1 degree increase in the temperatures of our seas, with the excess energy from that forcing the winds and increased rain that we are seeing. But the bigger risk and the bigger fear, the thing I was writing about in the Irish Times yesterday, it was a series of scientific papers that have recently been published saying that what we maybe instinctively think, well, climate change in Ireland wouldn't, you know, it'd be kind of warmer, it wouldn't be as harsh as it would be in some other locations. What some scientists are saying now, and it's not universally accepted, it is contentious, but some of the best scientists are saying that there are tipping points in our climate that may see the Atlantic circulation that warms this island come to a halt. If that was to happen, we would be a harsh, cold place to live in. And I think it was important to explain that to the Irish public so we know it's not climate change may not just be about some other countries having very hot drought and other conditions. It could actually bring very bad weather to our shores.
We're going to be talking to Colin Nolan of Ireland's Weather Channel about that after we've had this break. Eamon Ryan, thank you for joining us.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper. Weekdays from 4:30. Today.